It's time for Viewmaster on 95BFM, brought to you by Neon.
Right on, right on, right on. Love a bit of telly. Hi, Alex, how are you?
Hello, I'm good, thank you, Mikey. How are you?
Good, thanks. Cool. You've solved a query that I can't remember who I was having the conversation with last week, but I was having a conversation with about a show that I couldn't remember the bloody name of that I'd watched.
What did you remember about it?
Here's what I remember. It's about a guy, and he sort of gets into trouble. He's got a bit of a hangdog face, and we find out that he's got like this kind of attractive young girlfriend that he's with, yep. Got a house, and he built his own swimming pool.
Yeah.
And he was a professional swimmer, had to sort of give that up. His dad's a real estate agent, and he's having to just try and sort of sort out some deal from some deal, and it's pretty stressful. But the whole series begins with him basically climbing out of a tuxedo in the middle of the night, climbing out of the swamp, going, like someone thought they killed him, or he killed somebody, or something like this. And it's
and today I walk in the studio, and Mikey says, "What are we going to talk about?" And I say, "Quarry."
And I go, "That's what it was called."
Yeah, it's fortuitous, to say the least.
Tell us all about it.
So, Quarry, for anybody out there who doesn't know, which is maybe quite a lot of people because it sort of flew under a lot of people's radars, is a crime/war drama based on a series of novels by Max Collins. I think he was writing them throughout the 70s and even the 90s, and I think there are some maybe even coming out now. And it premiered on Cinemax way, 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 way back in September of 2016. So it's a story of...
Cinemax.
Yeah, Cinemax of...
No longer just Banshee. Soft porn fame.
Exactly. We can talk about this a little bit further
on. I'm not sure how I saw it.
Definitely have some things to say about Cinemax. but your favorite New Zealand, your favorite New Zealander and mine, Anthony Starr, is on Cinemax in a show called Banshee.
Show way better than I like Banshee.
I actually never watched Banshee.
You've never watched it?
Never watched it.
I think you'll freak out when you watch it.
Well, really?
Incredibly stylized and...
Yeah, cool.
Have you seen it?
I have, yeah.
What do you think?
It's a bit weird.
It's really weird, eh? It's just sort of like, I get it. I get that. I get this bit. You've really made a... the baddies.
You could probably draw a parallel between like the laying it on with a trowel of kind of acceptable softcore... porn and Banshee.
High octane action is their remit, basically. Mm-hmm. So this kind of fits into that. This Quarry is the story of Mac Conway, who returns to Memphis from the Vietnam War in 1972. It's just in the 70s.
Yeah.
And despite his best efforts, he's unable to forget the war and set his life on the straight and narrow, which is basically what you were referring to before.
So he comes back with another guy, and they're sort of heroes, but they're non-heroes, aren't they?
Exactly, yeah. So he's, after sort of these rejections and despair, he's approached by this shady and sinister man known only as the Broker, who offers him work as a hitman. And before long, he's kind of drawn into this network of corruption and contract killing. And this is a quote that, quote, spans the length of the Mississippi River, and antics ensue.
There's a lot of huffing into his moustache.
Yeah. He does have a really, really, really good moustache.
But he really, he does that, I don't want to be...
Moustache acting.
Yeah.
So as you were referring to before, the secret's also kind of like the gunpowder of the story. And the reason that he can't get work is because there was a scandal that went down in Vietnam, in the trenches of Vietnam, and it's kind of painted as deliberately vague in the opening episodes of the show. And the truth of that, of what sort of went down in Vietnam, is kind of eked out to us over the course of its 8-episode run. Mm. And we've all seen enough Vietnam War drama to kind of know what happens and to have a pretty good guess at what that scandal might be. But
you can be sure it's not going to be too cliche either. It's cliche, but not cliche.
Yeah, yeah.
Not cliche and the classic cliche.
I think all I'll say about that is like it doesn't really posit what happens as like some kind of, you know, like reveal or anything like that. But what I will say is that the episode where you do find out is an incredible episode of television. It's really good. Peak.
Hard to watch, actually.
So your moustache guy is a guy called Logan Marshall Green.
Of course he is.
I like to think about him as not Tom Hardy, because when you see him, you're like, hey, it's Tom Hardy. Oh, no, it's not. he's shorter than Tom Hardy, I reckon, but similar kind of like face rustling.
I felt a bit more lanky.
Yeah, I was going to say, not as bulky as Tom Hardy.
Definitely not as bulky as Tom Hardy. No, Tom Hardy is
Tom Hardy's
jacked.
Yeah.
He's definitely in the weight room.
Jacked.
And Jodie Balfour stars as his wife. And I think this is kind of
can
like...
Can you say that Tom Hardy's jacked?
Can you?
Is that right? That sounds a little bit sort of...
Built? Like, is there another...
Built.
I was going to say sturdy.
Cut.
Sturdy.
Sturdy, like in, you know...
Remember him in Bronson? Like, just, that's, yeah, that's
he's
quite deliberately...
He's just a beast in that. He's a beast, yeah, but that's because he's...
Dominating your frames.
It's a great movie.
It's a great
wow.
Movie. He's a great dude.
Have you seen the movie that he's in? Just the one where he's... He plays a Welsh man.
And just
him in the car.
That's amazing.
That is amazing, yeah. That movie. That is amazing. That's one of the most captivating movies I've ever seen.
It got reviews that were quite either side of the spectrum. Like people either loved it or they hated it.
You and I loved it.
Outstanding.
You and I loved it.
When my good friend Justin and I watched that, we didn't realise that the whole thing took place in a car. And after like 20 minutes of him just sitting in the car, we're like, oh, is the whole thing? Oh, the whole thing's in the car.
And then did we invested in it after that or not?
I loved it. I thought it was amazing. Yeah. It's like, you know, like he's maybe the only actor in the world that you could make that film with.
But it says great things about the writing of them too. That maybe.
Are you about to? No, go.
No, I'm just mentioning the film we are talking about. It's called Lock.
Do you want to do your impression of Lock?
No, Alex, I do not.
Go on, do it. Do it.
No, Donald, you have to pour the concrete.
That's right. Uh-huh. You have to pour the concrete.
Pour the concrete, Donald. Anyway, I'm sorry. BFM listeners for subjecting you to that.
I remember that. That's good.
So, also pivoting back to Quarry, it also stars maybe the only other guy you could put in a car for an entire movie by himself, Peter Mullen.
Who
he plays the broker, and he is incredible. It's like gravelly throated, you know, thinning hair, like just.
Who is he again? Who's the broker?
Peter Mullen. He is in maybe like New Zealand audiences were best known from Top of the Lake. Robin Malcolm's love interest in Top of the Lake. Broke out and
show him.
You'd recognize his voice. His voice is so good.
Yeah. Rotten. Great villain. But great lovable. Quite lovable villain.
He wants to make Tom Hardy money. He wants to get him rich. He wants to make not Tom Hardy money. He
wants to make Quarry.
Let's forget about Tom Hardy. We're moving on from Tom Hardy. Yeah. This show is like. Bloodthirsty, it's sweaty, like relentlessly paced, and it's really, 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 really well written. And that's like a pretty universally held opinion, I think. It's like got like 72 on Metacritic or something like that. But I don't really understand what critics think is lacking, because definitely at times during
spoiled is what
show,
we are at the moment in the world with TV. That's the thing.
I definitely agree.
It just chugs along there, and it's got a little bit of. It's a lot of tension. There's a lot of locking of doors and checking out through curtains. And
so I reckon if you've been listening to this segment over the last couple of months at all and found me to be a remotely trustworthy or reliable judge of content, I'd be willing to lay that reputation on the line and say
for Quarry.
Quarry. Yeah. Like, wow. Watch the first episode of Quarry, and if you're not hooked, then you can forget about me for all of the future.
Do you know what I mean? But it's very. Look out the curtain.
Totally.
I'm just going out for a second. Don't do anything stupid. Yeah. Just don't do anything stupid. If anyone comes, just don't answer the door.
Don't even touch anything.
Just don't. You did.
But as you just referred to, we are spoiled. And here we go with a bit of a plot twist. Because despite the critical appreciation and like some reasonably good rating numbers, the show was cancelled. And it was cancelled and it premiered in September of 2016. And it was cancelled in May of 2017.
So what you're buying is essentially a vintage wine. It's never going to be... You're getting a deal. You're getting the deal, aren't you? You're getting the first season deal. They're not going to be able to. Even though they do sort of try and, you can tell they're going for a second season.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
I'm just going to turn the mics off when I tell you about my favorite part that absolutely knocked my socks off in the whole season. Okay, ready?
Okay. Good. Yeah.
Blew my mind.
It was incredible.
How he did what? What? What?
This is the kind of reaction you can expect of you.
I was not ready for that.
So how does this show?
That's a big grown-up TV show there.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, it was really well received by critics. It was really the ratings were okay. They weren't fantastic, but they were okay. And yet, no second season. Not only a second season on Cinemax, but no second season anywhere else ever. And the reason for it is because Cinemax is broke, and they bankrupted themselves making a show called The Nick. And I don't know if you guys.
I love The Nick, but I do. I especially love the last seasons of The Nick. Were great.
Arguably worth it.
Yeah.
You know, arguably worth it.
What about Banshee? Doesn't that count?
It's written, by the way. all six episodes of season two are written.
Yeah.
They just never got to be made.
No, that's really true. So there's a really heartbreaking... Michael Fuller, the show's creator, wrote a sort of lengthy and kind of heartbreaking blog post about it, in which he says, and this is a quote, TV is tough and life is tougher. And like the titular character of the show, the series itself, was ultimately the victim of a system that is relentlessly unforgiving.
Ooh.
And it's like, it used to be that a show not being renewed after a first season was kind of a sign that it sucked, right? That it was a clunker, not commercially or critically successful. But this show was a success in both of those respects, and yet still, you know, rest in power. And I think that this is just a prime example of a show that is the victim of golden age.
Good TV, musical right? thread. Someone here saying they love the big star thread throughout, and the bar bands are great. As only you could be if you're portraying Memphis rock and rock and soul.
Amazing.
Big time. The as you would expect from any 70s TV show, sorry, any show set in the 1970s, the soundtrack is incredible.
Yeah.
It's really amazing.
So this is on Neon now?
This is on Neon now. Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Go on. Go get it.
Do it. That's a good cue to go out on the song. So here is a tune that Sarah dances alone to.
Thanks, Alex.
It's Harry Nilsson's Spanish version of his mega ballad.
And does this feature in Quarry at all? Is that why you picked it?
It's on the soundtrack. I don't think I can personally remember where it is from, but I know the character it's associated with. It's an incredible song.
Which character?
The flamboyant hitman.
I love him.
He is incredible.
Amazing actor.
Yeah.
Amazing Australian actor.
Is he? I actually didn't know that. There you go.
Yeah.
Turn this up. Turn this up for the key change.
Oh my god, I actually forgot his character. That's one of the best parts of the whole show.
So good.
Oh my god, his character is one of the greatest characters on TV.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Wholeheartedly agree.
Yeah, you got to watch this show. Oh, I forgot about that,
Quando pienso nel futuro, veo todo tan oscuro, no sé por qué te dejé marchar. Y es necesario que te enteres sin hablar de la verdad. Vivir no es vida si no estás tú. No podré existir sin tu amor. Cuando nuestra triste historia terminó, me sonreíste y a tus ojos el dolor se asomó.
Viewmaster. You wired me awake and hit me with a hand of broken nail. You tied my lead and pulled my chain to watch my blood begin to boil. But I'm gonna break, I'm gonna break my, gonna break my rusty cage and run. I'm gonna break, I'm gonna break my, gonna break my rusty cage and run. Too cold to start a fire, I'm burning diesel, burning dinosaur bones. I'll take the river down to Stillwater and ride a pack of dogs. I'm gonna break, I'm gonna break my, gonna break my rusty cage and run. I'm gonna break, I'm gonna break my, gonna break my rusty cage and run. When the forest burns along the road, like God's eyes in my headlights, when the dogs are looking for their bones, and it's raining ice picks on your steel shore. I'm gonna break, I'm gonna break my, I'm gonna break my rusty cage and run. I'm gonna break, I'm gonna break my, gonna break my rusty cage and run. I'm gonna break, I'm gonna break my, gonna break my rusty cage and run. I'm gonna break, I'm gonna break my, gonna break my rusty cage.
Frazee Ford, live at the Tuning Fork, Tuesday the 21st of November.
And are you holding, holding on so tight?
The golden voice of the Be Good Tanyas, Canada's Frazee Ford, is coming to immerse Auckland in her honey-dipped vocals and lyrical intimacies. Equal parts Americana, alt country and soul. Frazee Ford with Garrett Cato, the Tuning Fork, Tuesday the 21st of November, tickets from Ticketmaster.
What the what? Two headliners at one gig. Brooklyn indie rock darlings Big Thief and Spiral Stairs, aka Pavement's Scott Canberg, are coming to Auckland for a one-off show, and we're buzzed. So we're giving away a bunch of tickets. Just stay tuned to 95BFM all this week for your chance to win. Big Thief and Spiral Stairs, live at the Tuning Fork, December 3rd, tickets from Ticketmaster.
Are you sitting down? Could you be sitting down more? Well, just hold on to your heckin' seat because things are about to get humongous.
That's right, 95BFM Super and Cred's hyper-cool summer-sorted super prize pack is back.
It's got a return trip for two to Hawaii with Hawaiian Airlines, a year's supply of cheese, a summer supply of nice blocks and Little Island coconut creamery, two open water paddy dive courses and two snorkels, masks and fins from Dive HQ West Haven, a year's supply of burgers from Lord of the Fries, a summer of lunches from the Mexican Cafe, a $250 Meze Bar voucher, a year's worth of hemp oil and a Focus Herbal vape from the Hemp Store, a $500 music voucher from Marbex, a Thompson Whiskey Distillery tour and dinner. And that's just the first batch of prizes.
The 95BFM Summer Sorted Super Prize Pack.
It's true facts, the thing you need in your life right now.
Only this can make life better. Only this can make you happy. Enter now.
Go to 95BFM.com.
Questions are all around us.
Learn.
Why is liquid cold?
Learn.
What is maths?
Learn.
Why does this, ow, hurt?
Learn.
What is the Enlightenment?
I don't know.
And now, thanks to the University of Auckland, it's time to ready, steady, learn.
It is time to ready, steady, learn. Good. It's Tuesday morning. Our guest in the studio, Vicky McAdam. How are you?
I am very well, thank you. How are you?
Thanks for coming into our BFM breakfast this morning.
Oh, no worries.
Now, you're a member of the Elam Artists Graduate Show.
Yeah, that's right.
Which runs from the 30th to the 3rd of December. You've just handed in your year's business.
Yeah, last week, so I'm feeling quite relaxed today. In comparison, definitely.
So you're here today, we're going to talk about the relationship between art and screen culture.
Yeah, that's right.
Because we're all on the screens, hard out, aren't we, at the moment?
Yeah, we are. All of it, all of our visual culture is
at the moment or forever, from now on?
Just forever.
From now on?
If it doesn't kind of move its way into holograms or something. Which is likely, I think.
And then hologram on top of a hologram on top of
and the next thing, it's like real life.
Yeah,
seen that virtual reality
Black Mirror episode where it's basically installed in your eye.
Yep, your screen.
So something like that.
Get ready, everyone.
Yeah, you mean that sort of rewind it back and see what you did all day? That one or the other one?
That's still my favorite Black Mirror. That's terrifying.
Yeah.
But it's just an extension of what you're talking about. Like all of a sudden, look, I got two phones. We got five screens in here. Up to.
So tell us a wee bit about what you've been doing in regards to our screens and the wonderful world of digital interacting with the wonderful world of analog art.
Well, I'm a painter and a printmaker, and I think my interest comes out of being really into mediation, the way that like images and signs can move between different media and what that does to them. Because I think that everything's got a different like sort of political context, and when you move signs between things, they change, and the way that you read them changes. And I'm really interested in the way that that works.
Yes, I've got a friend of mine who's an amazing artist, and some of his work, I know that for it to be properly understood, you have to stand there in front of it and go, "Oh, okay, I get that. Wow. But it's not the same as if you see it online or if you see it. Or if someone sends you a JPEG of it or something like that, there is an importance, I think, of analog viewing of art.
Definitely, and I think it depends on the work that you're talking about and the media. Now that so much more artwork is sort of in digital media, it's easier for it to be disseminated all around the world. But the problem is like, what does that do to ownership? What does that do to artists getting anything for their work, you know, which is already a problem? So it's quite interesting, but my work's the same. I very much need people to stand in front of it in order for it to work. Yeah. You take a photo and it kind of flattens everything because everything's got sort of like five or six layers to it. And when you stand in front of it and look at it, it creates this sort of lenticular effect with different things move out at you. But if you take a photo, it completely kills it.
This is not to say that, and I hope I'm not speaking on behalf of him too much, but he's obsessed by the digital thing as well. He's searching for images and ideas and all that sort of stuff constantly as well. But at the end of the day, the work sits on the wall and it's like, wow, you know, and it's really important. So how do we get people to continue to go and look at things and to take things and then if they see something they like, to go, that warrants me physically going and looking at it with my eyes if I can take some time out of my busy lifestyle.
I don't know that there's a problem with people, with the numbers of people attending shows in person, but I think it's the same that it's always been, that it's a very small particular group of people that are doing that.
Yeah.
But what's interesting about the internet is that all of these images and artwork is accessible to so many more people than it ever was before. It kind of breaks down this sort of structure that's innate to access. But I think that there definitely is an issue with the way that internet technology kind of decelerates images and then makes them sort of like cheap or something. That's kind of interesting. And also that you do get
a
lot
of fun as well in a way.
It's super fun. It gives you a lot of space to play with it.
Yeah.
But I do wonder, like with Facebook events and that sort of thing, so many people that are like attending for the sake of attending, that's sort of the social like currency to it. And then they don't have to go because they've already checked in online or whatever. And I kind of wonder what that does to the whole thing.
Sort of doing my very best to avoid that this year. And it's been, I'm not sure whether it's been good or bad. Has it been good or bad, do you think, Sarah?
You mean clicking like or attending? Or
just even looking at Facebook and going, "Well, what's everyone doing?" Oh, well,
screen hygiene.
I didn't know about it. I didn't know about it because I didn't look at Facebook. Oh, well.
Well, then maybe it wasn't that important, you know, if one of your mates didn't tell you something.
Well, this is the thing, you know. But I mean, so you must have found some great stuff, though, with the interaction between digital and old school art.
Yeah, I have a lot of fun taking really stupid sort of like meme images and putting them through enough filters that you put them on the wall and they look like this painting. But if someone was to ask you, like, what's the original photo? I'm like, oh, it's Kermit the Frog or whatever. Yeah. I think that's quite funny. Like, sort of not that there's any like intention to trick the viewer or anything, but it's kind of like playing with their expectations.
That is art, isn't it? You know, or like it's a version of something else that's in your head. You know, it's like, yeah, that's what I mean. And so what are some of the bad things though?
What are some of the bad things? I don't know. I think I've been like, in terms of bad things, quite consumed by just the stress of being like within this like art making kind of like rut, but also being forced to make work because you have to do it your degree.
Has the digital thing, like what have been some of the you can see where is that is affecting the art world in a bad way?
I think those questions of access and the questions of like whether or not artists are receiving enough sort of pay or are able to actually live doing these trades.
I know that like say last year I think it was like I think 80% of all the books ever published in the whole of history ever were published last year, and you know, because now there's just so much data out there. And I know with images, it was something absurd like that as well. It's like, you know, so if there's that many photos just out there, you know, then next year it'll be like, this year we'll probably be twice that again, you know what I mean? It's like, I guess it's with art, it's getting there, it's finding out. It's, word of mouth can be so lightning fast, but at the same time, the internet's way faster.
Completely, and things come and go really fast.
Hey,
we've
got it. We must go down and hear the. You know, I heard about this. We must get. Oh no, hang on now about this. The first thing, which is probably the most important and most impressive, is gets lost along the wayside. You know.
That's, yeah, completely. And our attention spans are kind of reacting as well. So
our attention spans.
Yeah,
like we had any of those. Hey.
So yeah, I think we look at one image and we're ready for the next one, and it makes it quite hard when you walk into a gallery space with work. It's like very tempting to like look at it and then look at your phone and then walk out in 5 minutes. And
it's the infinite scroll thing, right? I mean, you have art history and you have specialist Tumblrs and specialist Instagram accounts that will be these amazing works, both current and historical, and then you're just scrolling on your phone.
Yeah. Before you know it, you're 72.
Yeah.
Before you know it, you're 72 and you've looked at every page on the internet and you can go, yes, right. Did you do anything? No.
Exactly. What do you do with it all?
I haven't met anyone for 40 years. Hello?
But yeah, you're right. Hello? There is an absence of contemplation, really, when you're just fanging through it all.
I also think it's interesting that like you might be engaged in like a really internal, really meaningful contemplation that's going on, but if you're not sharing that with other people, then you're not contributing to this like kind of sphere of information.
Yeah.
And I think that's quite like that's sort of a trend in our culture. Amongst me and my friends, I think we do a lot of talking about things we think about and look at, and I think that's maybe too much talking about that. But I think across the board, it seems like people might be kind of like internalizing these things instead of sort of putting them out there to contest or to discuss. Or
especially with something like art, when you've got it's the old, art was the original TripAdvisor, isn't it? What do you think? Oh, I think this, and there, I've made my decision on it. Good day, sort of thing. And it's, now everything's got a bloody review process, and everyone's got an uninformed, completely ill-informed critique from out of nowhere that no one knows who they are anyway, and who have got just as big a platform as everyone else. And so you have to browse for all that crap as well.
Yeah, it's really interesting looking at the way that like different work sits within both of those. Like you see work that's like so incredibly popular with critics and in this sort of high art scene, and then it just completely doesn't translate to anyone else, or alternatively the other way around.
And dumps on Instagram.
And it's just Instagram famous, like things that just take off. But what I think my work is kind of like placed in a place of trying to work out how to occupy both of those realms. Like, how do you make work that can be read by anyone Though I'm not, obviously, I'm not claiming any sort of neutrality no,
but
or
that's
like
what
I have to acknowledge
my own. To take into consideration.
Yeah, completely. Well, you have to, even putting it up for the grad show has been this really interesting thing of like realizing that your work is going to be seen by all these different people in a context that you haven't like shown it in before. Because even if you've had shows within like a maybe an artist-run space or maybe